Discuss with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi and welcome to the 93rd episode of Robots. I am Jana, and in today's episode, we'll be exploring the future of robots with Erin Rapaki from Adept Technology, who very boldly blogged on 1st of November that robots are boring. But first, let's look at what's been happening in robotics with Christine.
Thank you. French company Aldebaran has released a new version of its well-known Now robot, which you may know for its use in the RoboCup Standard Platform League. The new Now has two HD cameras for improved vision, thinner arms for a larger workspace, and a faster processor. It also comes with a host of software improvements, including voice recognition, better torque control, an arm collision detection system, and new movement primitives. In other news, researchers at the Intelligent Autonomous Systems Group at the Technical University of Munich have shown how their two humanoids, Rosie and James, can work together to make a little snack, freshly popped popcorn and a tasty sandwich. If you're a regular listener, you may remember the robot kitchen duo from a previous report. Rosie is a custom-made humanoid equipped with a Kinect camera with two KUKA lightweight robot arms, and James is a PR2 robot, as well as her previous kitchen feats, a traditional Bavarian breakfast or Bayerisches Weißwurstfrühstück, and some freshly baked pancakes. What makes this latest demonstration important is that the robots were not pre-programmed to perform the individual steps to accomplish their tasks, like opening drawers, turning on stoves, etc. Rather, they could reason about the command, "make me a sandwich," and figure out all necessary steps on their own. The research group has now just been granted a new 4-year grant to continue research in safe and autonomous physical-human-aware robot interaction. So we all have a lot of good robot-made food to look forward to. For more news and to see videos of the new Now, as well as Rosie and James cooking it up, have a look at www.robotspodcast.com.
Erin Rapaki is the Product Marketing Manager of Mobile Robots at Adept Technology, where she's responsible for catalyzing the robotics market by bringing together companies and thought leaders. She posted a blog on 1st of November entitled, "Dear Reader, I have news for you. Robots are boring." This controversial statement has sparked discussions about where the future of robotics lies. Our reporter Sabine spoke to Erin about her work, her hopes for mobile robots, the media hype that surrounds robotics, and about what she means when she says researchers should produce more boring robots.
Hi, Erin. Welcome to Robots.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. And you?
Great.
Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes. My name is Erin Rapaki, and I am the product manager at Adept Technology for the mobile robots product line, which features indoor autonomous navigation for various indoor environments.
More in general, what are the activities at Adept?
So Adept has been around 28 years, and since its founding in 1983, we've had a heavy involvement in industrial robot arms in various applications and various markets. Particularly, currently we focus on packaging, where we need to reorient materials, whether it's food or chocolate or components or parts, and reorient them in a way so they can be easily put and placed into boxes. Now, historically, we've been moving, doing a chip assembly, placing chips onto boards, or any kind of pick-and-place application in the industrial world. That's what our robot arms focus on. Probably the most well-known robot arm that we manufacturer today is called the Quattro. It's the only four-armed parallel access robot out there. A lot of robotics companies do produce Delta robots, which has three arms and an actuator and a gripper at the bottom to handle the rotation aspect. However, four arms allows for that fourth degree of freedom, which is rotation, as intrinsic in the movement. So you end up getting rotation a lot more quickly than with the other arms. Therefore, our volume and our throughput in a packaging application is a lot faster and using a Quattro robot instead of somebody else's three-armed Delta.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't actually realize that it was different from a Delta when I looked at the picture. You were mentioning that you're interested in speed and things like that. What type of challenges do you face in this field?
In the packaging world, some of the large challenges happen with the vision and the tracking. Now, we have very good vision, and things can be randomly placed on the conveyor and we'll reorient it in the right location. However, sometimes the packaging material doesn't fit well with the cameras that need to be used. So if the packaging is shiny, or if it's, for example, an organic item, a food item that has different contours and different shapes and very slightly side to side and very slightly from one another, that can produce vision problems where we might skip a product. That would produce gripper manipulator challenges. However, once there is an application that we focus our attention on, we'll work diligently to resolve the issues and variances in shapes if it's a natural food product, or if the package itself is shiny and reflective, we'll work towards fixing that problem.
What do you think are the innovations that are needed to actually make the next generation of industrial robots that can do these types of manipulations?
Well, currently our packaging line features a new rubber silicone vacuum gripper, where the silicone actually contours around the different product shapes. So if you have a food product that, whether it's meat or whether it's vegetables, that where the shape changes slightly, the contours and the rubber would be able to match that those differences. And what happens is the vacuum, there's somewhat of a linkage inside this rubber gripper, and a vacuum kind of pulls on the linkage and brings the gripper to a close so it can easily form around different shaped objects.
Is this a sort of soft manipulator?
Yes, it's a soft manipulator, and it's used out of materials that are USDA compliant. And I would add that the Quattro robot is also USDA compliant. So there's opportunities in food handling that we're currently scoping.
How do you think these type of manipulators will change manufacturing? Will just open the scope of products you can manipulate?
Well, I think in the manufacturing world, there's usually one type of product going through a line at any given time. And so you can have some success over controlling the variables in the product shape from the front end before it even gets on the line. If it's one type of product, it should have one type of shape and size, or you've pre-planned how things are going to change. For example, if you have a package that features four different types of items, you're likely having four different lines and sending the package between them to be filled. But where the compliance and shape contours really matter is actually in the real world. And one of the things I can talk about more on this podcast is bridging the gap between, and what are the key differences between, the industrial robotics world and the real world, where being able to have a single gripper that can grip onto different objects and handle different shapes and sizes is actually really important.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely come back to that afterwards. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can dive into the mobile robots, which is really your core area. Why is Adept interested in mobile platforms? I know that you guys acquired mobile robots last year, so tell us a bit what your interest is.
Well, Adept really wants to look back, take a step back, and we want to take a look at the entire system. And when we look at material handling, We have the one side, which is the industrial robot arms, which will take things off conveyors and reorient things and move components into place. But there's this entire other side of the logistics that's required. And currently, many manufacturing floors use automated guided vehicles, and they have been around for decades, where they might use lines on the floor or magnets or roads. For example, there's AGVs that will use light beacons to reference reflectors on a wall. However, setting this entire system up is very difficult. It takes a lot of infrastructure investment and takes a lot of time. Also, for companies who are more interested in lean processes, for example, for those in the robotics world who might not be familiar as well with industrial engineering or lean or manufacturing, the basic concept is that a warehouse full of inventory is a warehouse full of money. And when you take that inventory out of the warehouse and put it onto your manufacturing floor as work in process, every manufacturer hopes that their entire floor and their manufacturing process will work as planned. But machines go down, things happen, there's, for some reason, something goes wrong. And they'll try to mitigate that. Sometimes there's bottlenecks. There's one machine that'll work more slowly than another machine. And so what happens is, if you have a lot of work in process on your floor and something happens, essentially you have a lot of money on your floor. Now, currently the AGV industry will move pallets around a floor. And so they'll move one pallet, for example, per hour. Let's say this pallet has 10 units on it. Well, what's more ideal from the manufacturing perspective is, instead of moving one pallet per hour, they'd rather move one unit every 6 minutes. However, the way the AGVs work, they're large, they're slow, they're difficult to set up, they're expensive to set up, that having something, it can't really move that frequently, and that's a problem. Now, mobile robots, what's great about them is, for the past 15 years, they have served as a research robotics company, where they enjoyed the mind share and a broad software architecture to support many different applications in research and commercial areas, where over time they managed to develop this excellent vision-based navigation system. So this vision-based navigation system mitigates some of the problems with AGVs. For one, it doesn't take weeks or months to set up. There's no infrastructure required. It's all vision-based. Now, it might take, for us, it takes 10 minutes to set up a demo to get a robot running around an office. And the AGV manufacturers have just never seen this before. They were astonished. You can get the space running in 10 minutes. They were interested.
Is there already some planning involved when these robots are going around an office, or is it mostly avoiding obstacles?
Yes, the setup and planning phase, what happens is we plug a joystick into one of the robots, and essentially we like to call it taking the robot for a walk, where we take the joystick and a service rep, a setup, somebody doing setup, would drive the robot around, and the robot generates its own map that looks very much like a facility blueprint. Because the robot generated that map and it wasn't downloaded from somebody else's CAD file, it has a far more accurate view of the environment that it's supposed to be driving around. And then we can take that map and actually annotate it by putting, it's just a GUI, it's very simple, actually. We take the map and we drag and drop certain colored blocks that we want to be goals. We can drag and stretch do not go zones or only go in this direction down this hallway. And then what we can do is associate a task with that goal. So if the robot needs to go to the goal, and let's say it has a powered conveyor on top, and so it needs to go to the goal and make sure it's meeting the conveyor end, and the powered conveyor would then, payload would then push the box out onto some the other conveyor automatically.
So maybe we should directly look at what this robot is. So here, the robot that you described for your demos, is that the Adept MT400?
Yes, the Adept MT400 is the current product, and it's being sold to payload developers and being used in some applications right now.
What does it look like? What are its sensors and actuators? You mentioned the camera before.
Mm-hmm. So it's about the size of a chair. I would say it's about the size of a wheelchair base, but it only goes about 14 inches off the ground. And on it, it has a laser range finder, the SICK LMS-200, encoders, accelerometers, motors, an onboard battery, and all the electronics needed to support the navigation internally. And, yeah.
So when you say it's vision-based, it's based on the SICK laser.
Yes, a combination. The SICK laser is the primary visual input in order for the robot to reference its location on its map.
Okay. What do you think the market is for robots such as the Adept MT400?
Well, I'll go back to the manufacturing story, where what the mobile robot's vision-based software enables and what the MT400 enables, from the manufacturing perspective, they can do a couple of things they haven't done before. One of them is move smaller batches of products more frequently. So you have a more nimble system. It doesn't have to follow a road. It can, if something is in its way, it can find its own way around that object. If a path is blocked, it'll find its own path. So when this happens, what it means is that you have direct transport. For example, currently we have a partner called Swisslog, and they sell the MT400 with a bin on top into hospitals. And they've had a lot of success where hospital labs and hospital pharmacies can now directly send this bin to each other. How it works is there's a lab tech sitting at a hospital desk. Let's say they're doing blood work. And in the past, what they would have to do is completely leave their task, leave their desk, ignore the blood work that they have to do to go push a cart down the hall or 100 feet down the hall, if it's a long hallway, to the next step or the next location. And they would be wasting time. They would be getting distracted. In essence, they would be inefficient. And it's more expensive for the hospital to hire people to also just push a cart. And the hospitals have been, if you go to Swisslog's website, they have case studies about how they've enjoyed using this product and moving lab samples and sending pharmaceuticals directly to rooms. Now, the reason why it is known that AGVs are also in hospitals, the benefit of using the Adept mobile robots is the software, because for a couple of reasons. For one, it can go around obstacles on its own. It can interface with doors and elevators. It's much of a point-to-point type of navigation. It doesn't have to follow a road. It doesn't have to be blocked. And another interesting issue we discovered was other AGVs could be considered fire hazards. So if a large AGV breaks down and they're somewhat stuck to sticking to a route, or they're too heavy to be pushed aside, the lightweight aspect of the MT400 allows it to not be considered a fire hazard, so it can be put in hospitals that may have potentially narrower or more crowded hallways.
If you imagine a warehouse scenario, you probably will want to use more than one robot at a time. Are you thinking of ways to having multiple robots?
Yes, we have developed a software layer to manage multiple robots, anywhere from 50 or 100 units. And what the software layer is in charge of is not only making sure these robots don't bump into each other or making sure these robots don't all end up at one corner of the room. It manages a task request queue. So somebody else's warehouse management system, or in a manufacturing facility, a production management system, we develop our own proprietary management system through sensors. This all goes into a task request situation. For example, this material needs to be moved from this machine to that machine. And what our robots do is they look at this task request queue and they somewhat decide amongst themselves who's going to do it. Is it the robot that's closest to the pickup point? Is it the robot with the highest battery charge? Is it the robot that has the correct payload capacity to pick up that item? Do we know if the robot is available to pick up an item? For example, if it already has material on it, it might not be available to pick up something else. So we have an entire software layer to manage that up to 100 robots, likely more. We haven't tested beyond 100 robots.
So you don't only have the Adepts MT-400 robot. I visited your booth at IROS, and I saw all sorts of robots. There were underwater robots, ground robots, flying robots, and lots of different sizes. So I'm wondering if there's a unifying theme behind all these robots.
There is. What's nice about mobile robots is they have been supplying, and when I say that, what's nice about mobile robots prior to Adept acquiring them is for the past 15 years they have been supplying robots for various reasons out into the research world and the commercial world. So they have a broad understanding of many of the different applications that we might see for robotics down the road, but also how to support that from a hardware and technical level. For example, there is the Aqua 2 and the airplane that was added to appeal to help broaden our portfolio across only ground robots. So I suppose for the theme for research would be, we want to be your go-to company if you need any kind of research platform, whether it's air, land, sea, and land could mean indoors or outdoors. We understand the issues. We're a great supplier and support network, and we've been around for a long time from the research perspective. From the commercials perspective, and that's mostly what I focus on, I want to start doing a better job of evangelizing to the robotics community that the MT-400 and any future iteration of the MT-400 that might be down the road, a new version per se, it's the foundation for making robots happen. And when I say this, I mean every robot ever envisioned, whether it's science fiction or movies, it has an element of indoor autonomous navigation. What mobile robots and Adept can do now that we're one of the same is we apply the know-how and the expertise and engineering ability around executing on a complicated technology that's robust enough to serve the industrial world and therefore develop a very high-quality platform and supportable platform where people can do their own payload development. Now, the research world, researchers and hackers have the technical capability to go into the robot and do what they want with it. In the industrial world and the commercial world, people want it to be a product. They want usability. They want it to be simple. They want it to be supportable. And that's what we aim to do. And in a sense, I want to tell the robotics community, now's the time when you don't have to worry about the autonomous navigation portion of an entire robot application. You can purchase one of our platforms, have our software, it's supported, and you can go ahead and build whatever payload you want on top of it that would reference the goals and tasks for a floor layout in our software, and really start making inroads on making robots, indoor autonomous robots, happen with whatever type of payload they would like to see or like to build. Because frankly, the indoor navigation software did take 10 years to build for a reason. The architecture had to be large. There had to be learning involved from different installations. There had to be data collected from different installations. There had to be mind share from some of the best minds in the research community in order to make it work. But we have it working, and we're going to make it a good, trustworthy platform. I think that And this is what, frankly, gets me excited about my role here at Adept. I think this key platform and this key piece of technology, the indoor autonomous navigation, is the missing component for really making robots happen in a large way.
And I think this really fits into the message that you put on the Automaton blog. You were a guest writer a couple weeks ago, and you wrote an article on, "Dear reader, I have news for you. Robots are boring."
Yes.
So I think you already started summarizing the idea behind this article, but maybe can you give us a sort of one-shot view of what you were thinking there?
Absolutely. I had a year of experience, 3 different internships working in the aerospace industry. And as you mentioned, I've also worked at iRobot, DECA, AnyBots, and published a couple of conference papers. And I also worked at Gillette for 3 months. Now, Gillette South Boston makes all the razors that are sold, all of them. And you got to think, how are they making this small item in the U.S. successfully? So I noticed a theme, especially, and the reason why I tied this article back to the airline theme is the technology was not to fly. The ability for anyone to fly was not accessible until it became safe. So I see a parallel here where early days of flying, you had air shows, you had people doing loops, you had test pilots, you had military pilots, but they were crashing and burning. The military, similar to robotics, the military has been very interested in robotics. It was the military that pushed flight because of World Wars I and II. But now, the press, they don't care about flying. You don't hear stories about how remarkable flying is and how we take for granted the fact that we can get from point A to get across from the Pacific to the Atlantic in 5 hours. It's all about other problems. And so the metaphor in robotics is we're at the point where I see a lot of press and a lot of excitement around robots that are essentially crashing and burning. They're exciting to watch. They're fun. It's a nice idea. They get people excited. The researchers get to show off what they're doing. But what I learned from working at an aerospace, like an airplane takes 10, 15 years to build. The amount of quality involved is remarkable. It takes 5 or so years to design and produce a razor at Gillette. It takes, I think it took about 4 or 5 years for iRobot to generate the new Roomba. And so my attitude is that robots are really, really, really difficult to build well. And so to have the press take, or at least appear to take, all of these research robots and these robots that aren't quite aiming to be products yet, they're not taking them that seriously. Or the fact that they are taking these robots that are not products seriously and they're ignoring the real robots because they're boring bothers me, because I think it gives an attitude that robots aren't ready for prime time yet, when as a matter of fact, there are many not exciting, boring robots out there making people money. And in order for robots to happen, we need to match a robot with a problem. And if the problem is juggling a ping pong ball for amusement purposes, that's not going to make anyone money. It might make a couple people money. We need for the business and investor community to have respect for robots. In order for robots to ever to become products, in order for them to ever be sold in volume, we need the business and investor community to respect them. And they don't, because the press is very heavy on reporting about ridiculous robots.
Don't you think that the loops and crashes and ping pong juggling develops core technologies that might be needed to actually make these boring robots a reality? Things like SLAM probably were demonstrated with some show-type robots initially, but once we get there, we can actually use these in products. So it's sort of a first steps to getting there?
Yes and no. What it does, it creates excellent robotics engineers, which is important. A good example, though, of how you take a bunch of research engineers and turn them into product engineers is what Google did with the Google car. DARPA had the grand challenge. Many students got the chance to work on these cars. And then Google was able to bring them all together. And together, these different students from different backgrounds and with the advisement and requirement that they make it robust enough and secure enough to become a product, then that led into something real. So some of the research will end up being an algorithm tucked away in a PhD thesis, never to be seen again, because it doesn't have a market or it's not really solving a business problem. It's cool technology. It's great that we can push the technology and we know the limits of the things we can do now. And that certainly has its place and it will apply later. And the people who develop these, who do this research, end up being very valuable in the robotics community. However, for any PhD student who might be interested in taking their technology and turning it into a company, there are many challenges in making robots work, producing them in high volume, making sure it's a product. So there has to be a mix between the people who have built things for a long time and understand the agonies and issues with creating a business model around a product or having a product that solves a problem, and essentially all those marketing issues that most companies foresee. There has to be a balance between that and what is a cool technology. And I think in terms of robotics, it's a little off balance right now, where we've had a lot of cool technology shown. But when I went to a robotics conference recently, the professors are still asking just a general esoteric pie-in-the-sky type question, what's the killer app in robotics? And my attitude is, there are tons of problems out there in the world that needs to be solved because people are lazy, people are poor. For example, what if everybody around the world could receive the same quality of care from a doctor that lives in New York City? Now, that's an important problem to solve, and that's an important problem that robotics can solve. And when you look at the problem, you start thinking about what the technology needs to accomplish in order to become a product that people are willing to invest their time and money in, not only investors and business people, but a customer or myself as a patient. Luckily, there are companies making inroads with this, such as Intuitive Surgical, and I know some of the telepresence robot companies were talking about telemedicine, where what if a doctor could go, well, the telemedicine community in general, what if a doctor can go consult to a patient in any place around the world? Now, this is an important role. I think this is a huge problem. You have the elder care issue creeping up when all the baby boomers retire. We even have issues in the USA with rural health care, how people in rural communities don't have access to specialists or the most knowledgeable people in the world in order to meet their needs, and they don't necessarily have the ability to travel 5 hours to the nearest city in order to get care. Elderly people, they're not having as much money as they may wish they had. Most assistive care facilities are understaffed. And what if the biggest win is to have the elderly continue to live in their homes as long as possible? And there's a number of reasons that I think if they were to be able to live in their homes, it has to be a robot in there that serves as a tool and serves as a portal to take care of them and have people visit them and have a nurse check up on them and do a round around the house to make sure the stove isn't on. And so if more researchers and more professors focused on solving real-world problems, I think robots would be a little further along.
Who should be developing these applications? Should they be you guys who are making the core technologies, or should they be partners, people who just see these robots and have an idea? How do you see this working?
The way I see it working for the near term, and I'll give an example. I'll visit that assistive care facility example in order to explain this. I think what needs to happen is that the broader market landscape and the broader people outside of robotics need to recognize robots as a key technology enabler in solving their problems. And it's up to the robotics community to start explaining to the broader world, per se, about how our core technologies can solve their problems. There needs to be interplay between the two. To give a concrete example of something that I think a lot of people may find value in is, well, I work for Adept, and we have this autonomous mobile platform. Great. Now, let's say my mother is in an assistive care facility, and I'm not paying top dollar for one. So I have to assume they're understaffed. Most of them don't have nursing staff at night. They don't have doctors or specialists at night. So if an issue were to arise, it's paramedics. There's no specialists there. So what if I, as my mother's daughter, wish that I could have a private duty nurse available 24 hours a day to attend to my mother Maybe my mother has a specific condition. Maybe she has early stage Alzheimer's. What if I could hire a private duty nurse with expertise in early stage Alzheimer's? Maybe my mother's at risk for stroke. Maybe the nurse has expertise in recognizing stroke. What if there was, going back to the telepresence, a lot of people were talking about telepresence robots last year. What if there was video conferencing or telepresence on top of an autonomous platform? Now, the platform has to be autonomous because the facility is understaffed. Nobody wants to chase a cart around. And whenever my mother has an issue or a question or there's some sensor, there's an alarm go off saying there wasn't any activity in the room for the past 10 minutes, the first responder is actually a private duty nurse who understands my mother. She knows her. She has the time to build a relationship with her. She knows the conditions. And she can give the recommendations to the local staff, who might just be some person hired 10 days ago with minimal training, the person who's actually at the facility. And this could be a service. Now, should a robot company run this private duty nurse service? No. It should be people in the healthcare industry. From the technology perspective, it should be a robot company building the autonomous navigation portion. It should be a video conferencing company or whoever, Skype, whatever, or the healthcare company's proprietary software to run the video conferencing portion. But it should be somebody's service business to operate a call center of qualified nurses 24/7 who can then be available in a decentralized manner to jump into one of these devices and be a consult on the issue right away. So there's a responsibility from people who are already providing services in certain markets that need to recognize that this is just another medium for providing a service.
So going back to the media, how can the media communicate this technology so that people who are not at all roboticists understand that it can be useful and take sort of the hype out of it? Do you think we need to explain challenges better, or do we need to give more realistic demonstrations? What should we be doing to help in this direction?
Perhaps highlighting problems would be helpful. And then taking the turn to say how the robot might be a component in solving a problem. And it could be any robot platform out there currently existence. It could be one that's made up. But the problems, the generic problems that are happening is the decentralization of knowledge. So you have highly knowledgeable, highly specialized people who are located, who are not co-located with the problem that they're a specialist for. So from the telepresence robot aspect, where can you bring specialists to the problem without putting them on an airplane? Breaking up specialists. So I heard a story of some stroke doctors who self-organized to create their own call center model for providing stroke consultations to various hospitals. Now, the doctors very much enjoyed the call center model because then they got to sit in a chair 8 hours a day and be on standby for an emergency instead of walking around a hospital all day and having too little to do. So in the area where specialists are required, but not full-time, but they're required immediately, that's something that the robotics can help with. But with Siri and Google speech-to-text and communication, proactive information is becoming quite viable from a technical perspective. And that will be key in opening up a lot of new applications for robotics. And I'll just branch out to explain somewhat how I also view the robot world, where if you take Rosie the robot and you have something on a platform and arms and it talks and it's running around a floor, and you break it up into who's responsible for what. Well, Adept, we have that foundation now available as a product. It can navigate around the floor, it can get around obstacles, and go to where you need it to go. As long as it goes through that setup layer of knowing where the kitchen is, where the dining room is, etc. The torso, the arms, the actuators, that could be anybody's payload. and that can be put together with any kind of sensors or actuators or arms or mechanism, whatever people need. The head, the brains, all exists currently in the computer world. Proactive information, speech to text, Siri, the internet, the idea of cloud robotics, of referencing different databases in order to make decisions, looking at an object with Google goggles and figuring out what it is and figuring it out if it's important or not enough, important to pick up. Now we have it broken up into three different levels of, it's almost like a funnel, where you have the wide funnel, you have the narrow or the bottom part of the funnel is the autonomous navigation, the middle part is the actuators and mechanism on a payload, and the widest part is the software. But when people focus on the problem they want to solve, all the software tools are available to look at that and try to resolve that problem. In which case, those software tools would reference a task within the payload saying, pick up this at this place, pick up this at that place. And at which point, the software and the payload would say, pick up this at this place, at this goal. And then communicate with our problem, with our the Adept platform, what goal it would need to go to. So it's a matter of thinking outside the box and thinking purely from the perspective of, I really wish somebody would do this for me. I really wish that I could just have an instant expert next to me at Best Buy when I'm choosing between TVs instead of one of their sales guys. I really wish my mother can have a private duty nurse available at her nursing home 24 hours a day. And then fragmenting out call center models behind how this call centers or artificially intelligent models for how this work is delivered.
In the beginning, you mentioned bridging the gap between research and industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how we should go about that. Is it having researchers think about the problems that you just described, or should we still keep the researchers on, you know, part-time, really futuristic, fundamental research?
It's an interesting question because people are good at different things, and I respect that the best software developer in the world is not necessarily going to be the one to recognize market problems, nor should be spending their time recognizing market problems so they can actually sit down and design the best algorithms that you've ever needed for certain applications. I would say that the education needs to go to the end customer and have the end customer tell the tech people what they want and tell the marketing people what they want, where the end customer is the entire world of problems that could be solved. And, for example, even in material handling, there has to be a re-education about how this software compares to current AGVs. If I walk into a room and say, we're selling you an AGV, an automated guided vehicle, and I'm talking to production managers and industrial engineers, they're like, yeah, whatever. How is yours different? How does yours save me money? And I need to sit there and teach them just what, how our software works differently. So there's a frame of reference that in the material handling world that we're up against. The frame of reference is AGVs are large, they carry pallets, they're stuck to roads, the management layer is not nimble, it's going to take a month or two to set up the whole system. And we go in and say, it can be nimble, it can be quick, they can go around obstacles, they can do direct point-to-point path planning, it's flexible, and we can be set up in a day. And from the industrial perspective, that allows, because that costs less, the value proposition is more appealing and they might get their return on investment a lot earlier. And in the broader robotics world, we need to create respect for robotics. We need to let investors and business people and enterprise people know that it's at a point where the hardware can be trusted in. Luckily for Adept and the robots we're building, the automated guided vehicle world has already set safety standards. So I recall some people in the enterprise world being concerned with telepresence robots about safety standards and insurance and liability. Now we can go in and say it meets the same safety standards as the AGVs. It's not going to hit people. Don't worry about it.
I have a feeling that we're in a turning point in robotics right now, where for years we had a lot of these maybe more hype-ish videos simply because we didn't have the technology to pursue products like you're describing right now. And now we have the Kinect. We have a lot of sensors that are allowing us to actually perceive our environment in a much better way. So is this problem just that we're at a turning point in robotics where it wasn't possible before and now it's possible and we're just naturally going to start seeing these products happen and it's going to sort of snowball?
I certainly hope so. There was certainly, well, when I was at Anybots in 2010, there was a number of things we wished for. If only tablets were out. If only 4G was deployed. If only the Kinect sensor was out, because that would be a cheaper way to do collision, simple collision avoidance. 2011, they all came out. We have tablets and iPads. We have 4G. The Kinect will help recognize objects. Cameras are getting cheaper. Processing is getting faster. Google and Apple both have enough data behind their speech-to-text programs where they start becoming robust. The cloud is getting fast enough to make decisions if someone's application requires for a robot to know what it's looking at with Google goggles, and it needs to reference the entire cloud to know what it is they're looking at and whether or not that's the object they need to it needs to pick up. All that infrastructure is finally in place. So the robotics world was generally waiting for the computer world to get to the point where it's usable. I think it's up to robots to take the next step and bring all that digital content that's out there in the world and bring it to a physical means, a physical way of doing work, a physical way of doing meaningful things for people.
That's really interesting. We haven't really talked about cloud robotics yet on our podcast. Is that the future? Is that something that industry is looking at?
The Microsoft Kinect team, when they realized that the application behind the Kinect was to play video games, they needed data. They needed to do a best fit or regression analysis on what heads and faces and hands and legs and bodies look like compared against the couches and backdrops they were standing in front of, the clothes they were wearing. And the only way you can do that, and it's the same way Google's speech works as well, is continuous improvement through data. And so from what I understand, the Kinect team had thousands of images up on Mechanical Turk and had people tagging them, hand, foot, knee, torso, leg. And that made it so the Kinect can now recognize generally any body type because it has that data and that fit to work with. Now, the human body is just one object out of thousands, millions of objects in the world. And so if robots are ever going to recognize lots of different types of objects, which it may need to do someday, I'm not saying there's ways to make money without robots having that capability. But in 10 years, you know, it might be nice that robots can recognize all certain types of objects. But you need data. Now, here's the problem with that. Well, for cloud robotics, that data would all have to live in a central database. That's where cloud robotics and 4G and the internet and the speed of the internet is really essential for a robot to look at something, take a picture, whether it's with a Kinect camera or with a 2D camera, take a picture and think, okay, what is this? Reference the entire database of objects, and it can come back with a really good guess as to what it is. The other half of that problem, though, is how do you generate that data? Robotics companies can't really afford to pay people on Mechanical Turk to tag hundreds or thousands of images of all the objects across the world. But I recognize a chicken and egg problem and also potentially an opportunity. If today's online shopping world, and I think it's likely that today's online shopping world recognizes that selling objects that are 3D, or when you go to a website, today you look like a 2D picture. But if I go to a website and tomorrow I can twirl around a 3D object of that thing I want to buy, great, awesome. I now get an idea for what the whole product looks like. I get a better view. I know, and I buy it. So what if the entire online shopping world grasps the idea that 3D objects on their websites is a far better way of selling product than 2D pictures? Cool. So what the robotics world should be thinking is, are all these 3D objects being captured in a central location? Because if they are, if we can somehow think ahead and worry about that ahead of time, then the day robots will be able to recognize 3D objects will be a lot sooner. So essentially, we need data. Robots need data in order to recognize different objects in the world. That data needs to live in a central database out in the cloud, not locally on a robot. And we need the internet and 4G for these robots to reference the cloud.
I was wondering, the first successful products were things like the Roomba, which were behavior-based, and now we're really going towards something that's data-centered, that uses SLAM, that's very model-based. Do you think there's still room for successful, simpler robots?
Absolutely, and this is when there's two things to really think about critically is, what is the problem you're trying to solve? And how much are people willing to pay for that problem to be solved? And so Roombas hit a mark. People were willing to pay a couple $100 so they never had to physically vacuum their floor again. And they may have had the intrinsic benefit of having a cleaner floor because the Roomba would vacuum it for them more frequently than they would. Now, that has a place. I saw another company. They have a robot that can self-navigate itself through drainage pipes and sewers. And that has a value proposition as well, where these waterworks companies and these sewer public works companies can now get an idea if there's a crack in the pipe somewhere, if there's a clog, if there's something going on. And otherwise, if they had to wait for this problem to escalate so much that they had to replace the entire system or there was some catastrophic failure, it's far more worth it to them to have a robot running through the pipe. And that's behavior-based, where it's taking pictures where there's holes or gaps so it can look up pipes or up to drains or down into forks in the pipe, and it'll just follow the pipe to the next location. So it really depends on, it's the problem that needs to drive the technology. And right now, with the research world going full speed ahead as they are, it's a bunch of technology looking for problems, and that is not how to match it. That's not how to make it work. But you need the people who have problems to recognize that there's plenty of enabling robotics. There's plenty of enabling technology in robotics that could be applied to solve their problem. And that's what the press is not communicating.
So what are some of the challenges that still need to be solved for autonomous navigation?
We do have a setup period. We do have people setting up the robot. And one of the challenges is we don't necessarily want to have to send a service representative in order to set up everyone's robot. It'll be nice for the robot to set itself up or at least have the usability well enough so a customer can set up their own system. And that's something we're working on. Essentially, we don't want to have to send a human with every robot. We want the robot We want the robot to take responsibility for its own setup and deployment and have the end customer, the user, be able to tell the robot what they want to do in a very simple, usable manner.
And finally, you've worked for lots of amazing robotics companies. I think that's a roboticist's dreams. There was iRobot, Deca, AnyBots, and now Adept. What have you seen from the robotics industry in the past years, and how do you see it developing in the future?
Well, one thing I saw at all the companies was that robots are hard. Deca took about 10 years to get that Gen 3 of the iBot ready to go, and FDA approval. FDA approval is not kind. I guess this is a problem where there's plenty of applications, and there are lots of applications for robotics in the medical world and the healthcare world, but the way the FDA is designed in the U.S. is not friendly towards new ideas. And so you have a lot of robotics companies who want to enter the healthcare markets who will likely elect to go to Europe or Canada or Asia before the U.S. And so where the press, say in the United States, might be excited to report on existing robots, we're going to be the last, the U.S. will be the last people to have robots in healthcare because of the FDA. So that's a challenge. And yeah, I guess it gets back to the same story where the iBot wheelchair at DECA was solving a problem. The Roomba at iRobot was solving a problem. So the design catered towards how can this Roomba operate in many different types of households successfully, make sure it doesn't get caught on things, make sure it doesn't break. And when you're shipping millions of robots out, there's a huge technical challenge in making sure that they're manufactured well, they're not going to be returned or sent back, that they're functional. And that's a large challenge. At AnyBots, a robotics startup, how do you open up new market space for telepresence? And it was interesting that Willow Garage and Vigo, we all, the three of us announced telepresence robots last year at a similar time. But all three have had some success in this space, but it's breaking open new market space. And a lot of the problems from the market were along the lines of web security. How do I know that nobody's going to hack the video camera? Or liability insurance. How do you know that the other person on the other end isn't just going to drive the robot into a wall and break things? Or plenty of red tape, but also plenty of opportunity to what I spoke to before about allowing specialists to be in any place when they need to be, or breaking up different types of service models into call center models where the service rep can use a telepresence robot to be in this other location and attend to their duties. And Adept, what's great about the guys, the team here, is they've been building high quality, complicated industrial robots for 30 years. So I'm particularly excited about being here because there's a team in place who knows how to execute on building building high quality robots. And that, and one of the reasons why Adept acquired Mobile Robots is so we can bring these two teams together to collaborate and work together and bring this new technology to the marketplace and the robotics community in a very well thought out, high quality, reproducible, easy to support kind of way.
Great. Thanks, Aaron, for being here with us on Robots.
Okay, well, thanks for the opportunity.
And that's it for today. As always, if you want to find out more, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. And if you would like to contribute a bit of audio or video to our Christmas special session, there's still time. Just go to robotspodcast.com/Christmas or email your files to christmas@robotpodcast.com. From me, goodbye for now. Discuss with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.